Hi, this is Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and I am ridiculously excited to have our guest. Please introduce yourself and tell us about yourself and your new book.
So my name is Donna Freitas. I live in Brooklyn, and my new book, it's my debut adult novel. It's called The Nine Lives of Rose Napolitano, and it is about a woman who has never wanted children, and her marriage has come to rest on whether or not she'll change her mind. And basically, I think the story is very much about women's choices around motherhood, but also marriage and career and how all those things interact. But I follow Rose in the story down nine different paths, all of which depend on whether or not she has a baby. And in some she has a baby and in some she doesn't. And you see all the many different kinds of consequences from that choice. And I think one of my favorite parts about the book is also, I think the book is a lot about motherhood, her choice to become a mother or not, but also it's about her relationship with her own mother. And so I hope that readers, regardless of whether or not they're moms, really find themselves spoken for in Rose. Yeah,
I would hope so too. I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for the idea that your life is supposed to take a certain path. If, you know, if you're a woman and, you know, like, okay, so you get married. If you're in a heteronormative relationship, you know, you get married and like, it's like marriage, house, kids. And it's amazing, like even if those things do happen, but not in that order, there's judgment. And if you quote unquote wait too long for one of those things, there's judgment. And I like that you started from a place where here's Rose and she's married, but she already made this decision. Whereas she made, you know, like what, like she decided to get married, but the decision was supposed to have been made between her and her husband. The decision of children and whether or not they were going to have them. And suddenly that comes into flux. And it was just really, it's a much needed novel. So how did you come up with this specific idea, and how did you sort of begin drawing the distinct different lives of Rose?
Well, so one of the things I've started doing in my writing life before I start a book is I ask myself this question, like what feels urgent to me? And what question feels urgent, or what topic feels urgent? And before I wrote Rose, what popped into my head when I asked myself that question when I was getting ready to write a new book was, oh, women and children, specifically a woman who doesn't want children. And that was something that I really felt pressured about a number of years ago. And I really resented the pressure that I felt. Like there was a time where I felt everywhere I turned, someone was asking me if I was gonna have a baby. And it was just really hard. And I think the ways in which I was really happy in my career. And there was also a point where I felt like people were really almost judgmental about the fact that I was happy in my career. like I shouldn't be so happy. What I should be focusing on was becoming a mom, which was gonna be my true calling. And so when I was getting ready to write a new book, I just knew immediately, okay, I wanna write about a woman who doesn't want children. I want to explore that choice, or the fact that it should be a choice and she feels like it should be a choice, but everyone is pressuring her as though it's just a given. And but when I was getting ready to write it, I was like, well, how am I going to do this? Because I could imagine all these different scenarios, like my character would refuse to have a baby and then I'd write about the consequences of that. Or my character would decide to have the baby and then I would, you know, maybe she'd be happy, but maybe she wouldn't, and I couldn't choose. Because I had all these different possibilities. Like I also thought, oh, like Rose could have a baby and be totally happy, or Rose could have a baby and then like run off and have, you know, run off and abandon the baby. I don't know. Like, I could imagine like all these things. And then one day I just thought, well, what if I could write all the stories? You know, what if I could follow her down all these different paths and kind of see, you know, all these different roses and all the, like, all the kinds of consequences for her decision. And so it was when I realized I could do that, that I just sat down and I wrote like a fiend. And it felt really exciting to get to explore all these different fantasies I had about what could happen. But I think one of the things that was most exciting to me was I thought there are, women have so many different experiences of this, you know, of becoming a mother, of not becoming a mother, or the pressure to becoming a mother. And it felt like, oh, I could write a book that could really maybe encompass a lot of women's experiences. And that felt really exciting. So
it was very exciting for me to hear about, because, you know, I'm a mom myself, and I'm a mom of twins. And that a lot of people have judgment about that in general. And the things that people will say to you, you know, regardless, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, coming, like going into a diner and people like with my newborn twins exhausted and being like, oh my God, it was so much easier when I could sleep till 12 and my cat was the only one waking me up, you know, and then be like, oh, better you than me. And I'm like, what exactly is that supposed to mean? Like, you know, so it's like, you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't. Like, you know, if you're like a woman who decides you're not going to have kids, there's judgment, and that judgment, like, you're cold and you're this and you're that and you're selfish. And then if you have kids and you're not doing it right, there's judgment on that, or, you know, people will say inappropriate things. So I love that you were able to explore just different timelines. And it's almost like, you know, this is like a book that I would consider what I call for like the sci-fi curious or the fantasy curious.
I love that.
There's another book that came out a few years ago, and it only explores two different timelines, but it had, and in the woman had children in both timelines, My Real Children by Jo Walton. But I recommend it to people because it has that whole idea of there's two different ways the story can go. And I think like a sliding doors type, which isn't really science fiction, I think people would grasp it, but it might allow them to read more about alternate universes.
Well, first of all, I love that you think it's sort of like sci-fi or fantasy light, because I feel like one of the things that was really fun about just deciding, oh, I can write all these different roses, was I thought, okay, I'm going to ask my reader to just sort of suspend, you know, disbelief and just go with it. Like, just go with this possibility. And so that it just felt like a fun challenge. But I wanted to mention one of the things that's like interesting about judgment in this particular book. And by the way, I feel like judging women is like a sport in our culture.
Oh, like, so love. Much. You know what? Like, you go to check out groceries, and there's like a picture of the latest celebrity who had a baby and what their body looks like, or, you know, like whether or not this is finally going to be Jennifer Aniston's chance at a baby, whether or not, you know, like the tabloids have decided she wants one. I'm certainly not going to specifically ask her, but.
And I think we, you know, we judge women for everything, whether they have children or not, where, you know, and it, like you said, as soon as they have children, we judge them again. But one of the things that's been funny about, you know, the book's not out yet, but a lot of people have been reading because of the galleys. And I've got a question a bunch about the fact that, let me see if I can get this right, that basically Rose does a lot of things, like she transgresses a lot, as you know, since you've read it, like, some of the things she does are egregious. And, you know, when I was writing it, I thought, well, this is sort of a generous format because she has all these different lives. And so in some, she can be like really good and we'll feel, you know, like we, you know, we'll think, oh, Rose is doing the right thing. But in others, she's really going to do the wrong thing or something that we decide is the wrong thing. And one of the questions I keep getting is, how did I allow Rose to transgress so much, but yet I didn't judge her? Like I wrote about her without judging her. And every time I get a question that's like that, I think, how interesting. Like there's this, like the reflex that we have is to judge her really harshly or to judge women who do things we don't expect or that we might, you know, women aren't supposed to do. We want to judge them harshly. And then people are surprised I don't sort of like maybe come down moralizing at her during the book, or she doesn't feel guiltier, I guess, in the book for doing the things she does. So it's just been interesting to sort of hear people's impulse to like want to judge her and then be curious why I didn't judge her as a writer.
Yeah, that's actually kind of amazing. And it, you know, I'm reading the story and to me, she's human. And people aren't perfect and people aren't going to make the decisions that you would make. Kind of looking through everything, she's always authentically Rose because, you know, she makes the decision and she kind of lives in that world. And yeah, that's interesting. Wow.
Well, I guess in some ways the question is like, how much humanity do we really allow women to have? And
right.
When I was writing,
yeah.
I was sort of, how much humanity is, you know, am I going to be able to get away with Rose? Like, how much am I really going to allow her to push the boundaries of what we think of or what we expect of women, especially as they're dealing with this question about motherhood?
How did you choose the amount of lives you were going to show?
You know, I mean, I think partly just like the cliche of like, oh, 9 lives. Like I just, that when I was like writing, I'm like, I just titled it like in my laptop. Like
right.
Before I sat down to write, like I was like, the 9 lives of Rose Napolitano.
That's good though, because that like, because otherwise I feel like you could have driven yourself crazy. Like just like being like, and then this. So you're like, all right. There are infinite possibilities, but I'm going to explore 9 of them.
Well, so what's funny is I literally didn't think much about it. It was just the title I typed into my laptop before I started. But then my editor in the UK, when I first met her, she was like, oh, well, 9 lives, like 9 months of pregnancy. And I was like, exactly.
Nine, yeah, there we go. Yes, exactly.
That is why I did it.
Yes. Of course. Why not? Oh, wow. Mind blown. I love when that happens.
I think I could have gone, I had so many different possibilities in my head for her though, like all these different paths she could have taken that I feel like I could have done more, but like, I felt like there had to be a limit. Cause I mean, there are an unlimited amount of like choices and ways that motherhood and non-motherhood could play out with women. And I think I ended up writing the ones that really loomed large in my head, but I definitely had others. So
that was actually my next question. So when you also talked about Rose's relationship with her own mother, how do you feel that mother-daughter relationships can affect the whole idea, like your whole idea around motherhood?
I think it's really complicated. For me, writing the mother-daughter relationship in Rose, in some ways it was, aside from the question of what will she or won't she have a baby, that was really the most important part of the book for me.
Right.
And it's the part that changed the most in the book while in different drafts, because in the first draft of the novel, there was a way in which I held Rose's mother like almost away. And then when Pam Dorman, my editor, bought the book, she was like, no, you have to go deeper. And at first I resisted, and partly because that part of my life is so tender. I lost my mother when I was in my 20s, and I you know, it's been a long time now, but I, in some ways, I was like afraid to touch it a little bit. But then it became like the most meaningful part of the book to me, because there was a way in which, you know, I never got to really have those conversations with my mother. And I kind of played out all the ones I wished for in Rose's relationship with her own mother. And so for me, I think as the writer, it ended up being the most poignant part of the book. Cause I remember Pam, my editor, she's, oh my gosh, she made me read the book so many times. Like she would be like, let's go look at this sentence. And I'm like, really, Pam?
So you are reliving each of Rose's 9 lives, but like more than that.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I, you know, so one of the things, not that I memorized my reviews, but the PW reviewer who gave it a star, which made me so happy, she called the prose precise. And I was like, yes, because I picked it every sentence in that book. But it made me very proud to have my prose called that. But anyway, when the very last time that Pam made me go and read the book, it looked like an actual book. So it was like the PDF of how it was, and I hadn't seen it for a while. And I thought, wow, I can't believe I'm gonna have to read this again. And then what was interesting to me was I was able to read it almost like a reader, like as if I wasn't the writer. And I like cried. It was so weird. I've never done this before with my own book. I cried through all those scenes with Rose and her mother. And I thought to myself at one point when I stepped away from the book, wow, like I really wrote the book I needed. Like I wrote the relationship between Rose and her mother that like I needed, I wished for me, or the one that I wish I could go back and have with my own mother. And so anyway, you know, I think if my mother had been alive, I bet our conversations would have been really complex, but I'm very interested in mother-daughter relationships in general. And I often write about them a lot in my books. I think they're just endlessly rich for exploration because, you know, we love our mothers. We also hate our mothers. We want to be like our mothers. We don't want to be like our mothers. Like sometimes I'm struck by how, as I get older, I look more like my mother. And sometimes I catch my reflection in the mirror and I think, oh my gosh, I am my mother. How did that happen? And I don't know how I feel about it.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, it was one of the things I like, or that I enjoyed about writing the book was just its many angles of our relationships with our mothers, or at least I hope it is.
So. No, I think so too. And actually I hope, please tell me if this is too much. I don't want to give everything away. When Rose does have the baby, she has a daughter. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that was deliberate, that it was always, was it always a daughter because that was always the baby she would have, or was it always a daughter because it was exploring mother-daughter relationships more?
I mean, I knew if she's gonna, in the version she was gonna have a baby, she was having a daughter. There was no doubt, because I really loved the idea of having multiple generations of women in the book. Right. You know, from the child to the woman who's married and maybe becoming a mother to like the mother herself, and just exploring that intergenerational dynamic. But yeah, so I guess I always knew that it would be a daughter, because I think also like I couldn't imagine it another way. So I just thought, oh, it'll be fun to write a girl child.
you like in general, so you've written children's books before and middle grade and YA. How did you decide to transition? I mean, we kind of talked about this a little bit, just like with your whole inspiration for the book, but like, how did you decide to sort of go towards adults? Were you reluctant to, or what did it just kind of feel like natural because of everything that was looming to birth this specific story? Pun intended.
You know, it wasn't like I woke up one day and decided I am going to write adult novels now. You know, I'm a big person. I'm big on following the questions wherever they lead you, whatever those questions are. And And, you know, before I was just playing around with teenage characters, I love YA in middle grade. I love the big feelings that happen during that time and exploring them. I love that that is a time when we explore big questions in our life. And I love pushing into those questions that we have as teenagers and the different themes running into. But prior to writing Rose, I'd written a memoir that came out in 2019 from Little Brown. It's called Consent, A Memoir of Unwanted Attention. And it's pretty dark and heavy. But I didn't plan to write that either. Like, I just opened my laptop one day and I realized, oh, I'm gonna write about this thing that happened to me during grad school. And I think writing that book and letting myself, there's a way in which I feel like with my children's books, I was always going back to a time before grad school. Because there was grad school really marked a before and after in my life, because I had this terrible Me Too experience with a professor that I really think about, like, it cut my life in two. And I think there's a way in which writing children's books, you know, and almost in a cheesy way, it was like this refuge for me. Like, I went and I wrote from this safe space in my life, and it was the place I wanted to dwell. And then once I wrote the memoir, it was like it finally, like, opened the door to me being, like, really thinking about my life as an adult and feeling different about it, feeling more safe. And so the next time I asked myself about writing, you know, what did I want to write about? The question I had was the question for adults, and I just followed it. And so I didn't really think too much about it. And I mean, the only thing that was going through my head was like, oh, you know, I guess I'm writing an adult book. I wonder if anybody will want it.
So, well, not only did people want it, but it got star review from Publishers Weekly. So yeah.
Yeah, it's been kind of a magical experience with this book. And though I do think, though, that I could never have written this book without writing all of those YA and middle grade books. I think the wonderful thing about writing YA and middle grade is there's so much freedom, you know, in that space. Like, you can be voicey, you can experiment with structure and character, you can play around with reality. Like, everybody's doing it. Like, you can write sci-fi and then write realistic fiction and nobody bats an eye. And I think in adult books, it's maybe more siloed. Like, we decide you have to write like this, or like, I don't know.
You're either doing literary fiction, or you're doing a thriller, or you're doing like romance. And there's been, I think, like, the adult book market is starting to really open up as far as that goes. You know, you're seeing a lot of crossover. I mean, I read constantly during the early days of the pandemic, and I still do. And I think one of the things that I've noticed, that there are a lot of adult authors playing around with genre, almost like the children's and YA authors would. I spent about 15 years as a children's librarian. This is not knocking books that were around when I was a teenager, but I was, or a child, but I found that time goes on, authors seem to be more comfortable writing books that explore the bigger part of the bigger feelings. You know, like, when I was younger, a lot of the books that were around centered around some sort of perfection or some sort of ideal, not all of them, like, about, like, the most popular kid in school, and maybe not so much about, like, the pain behind that, because it's an ideal and that makes that person not a full person. Children's books started to play around with that. They started to play around with genre, with feelings, with exploring feelings through sci-fi, and or even just in general, imperfection, which actually brings me to just, like, motherhood in general, kind of back to what you were talking about, because I do feel like now adult books are kind of getting that way too. It's not either like you are or you're not. You've written a little bit about social media as well, and that culture. I find social media culture and mother culture to be almost dystopian.
That's so interesting. It's funny because, like, so I'm also a scholar, and that's, you know, the social media research I've done is I do these national studies, and then I write about my findings. And so the social media work is coming from that. And I'm specifically looking at college students, so like the college population. But it's so interesting. I love the idea, or like, I'm going to think more about the idea that the sort of motherhood space on social media is dystopian. Like, I feel like my brain is firing just thinking about that.
And I'm sorry for my long-winded before to kind of get where I was going. I think like my point was that adult literature is sort of following suit into exploring those big feelings that you were talking about and playing with the whole genre space. But yes, yeah, I mean, there. But shifting back to what I was just talking about, yeah, it is, in a way, the way that social media frames motherhood is almost like when you'd see the, you know, when you, before social media, you know, there were always magazines and there were pictures of celebrities with their children looking perfect. Whether or not that's true, probably not. But now you have like Pinterest and you have all of these blogs and social media where like, you know, people like position their children just perfectly, and everybody else who might not feel like they're feeling that way might be like, what am I doing wrong? My kids are a mess every single day. But it is kind of a new way of not really framing, of not allowing yourself to be vulnerable, not allowing to be like, hey, this is hard work. Some days I just want to run away.
One of the things I feel endlessly interested in right now, especially since I wrote Rose and I've been like working on other books, is just this thought of, you know, our public appearance, like what we do in public, or like the veneer of that we put forward versus all the private feelings we feel, all the anxieties, like all the ugly thoughts we might have but wouldn't dare share, and just this sort of dissonance between our public selves and our private selves, and the way in which the pressure to appear a certain way in public really can just, it's just exhausting, or it can, it's really hard. I think we're really hard on ourselves. We're very punishing. And so there's such a lack of forgiveness. This goes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of judgment. Like, there's such a lack of forgiveness for women in our culture in general. And I'm really interested, like in the space of like a novel, when you're writing a novel, to me, that's such a knot that needs to be untangled. And novels really give you the space to explore that public and private, in the dissonance between them, in a way that you maybe wouldn't dare in real life, because, you know, everybody can hide behind like fiction. So like, you're allowed to have those ugly thoughts, I guess. Your character is allowed to have those ugly thoughts. And I remember when I was writing Rose, I thought, like, especially with my first draft, I put like every verboten thought I'd ever had, I think, about motherhood, about having children, about marriage. I put them all into Rose, and I thought, well, I can always take them out. Or like, you know, like, it felt so good to get them out. And I remember I really didn't know what people were gonna think, or like if anybody would allow me to say those things. And so it was really a surprise when my agent, when I first showed her, she reacted really strongly, like my writer friends did. And there was a lot of whispering, like, oh, I've had that thought, but I've never said that out loud. And I was like, oh, really? And one of the effects of the book and the way, the intense way people have responded to it for me, is it's made me feel a lot less alone. Like, I always thought maybe I was the only one who had these thoughts. And now I know, like, oh, I'm definitely not the only one. And I'm glad I just said them. But I do think that it's like, we just expect so much from women, especially now in COVID. I feel like the veneer is falling apart.
Oh my gosh. So much. Yeah. COVID has compounded so many problems everywhere, I think. Aside from the fact that, like, I feel like we've all kind of been strapped into our seats to take a front row view of many social issues. I think, you know, there've been endless articles just about the effect on mothers that COVID has had.
Yes, that in a year, we've gone back to the 1950s, basically. I think, my background is in gender studies, and it's been really intense to witness this. And like, after all, you know, I think maybe you'd heard that, I think it was like the month before COVID started, it was the first time in history that women outnumbered men in the workforce.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like this shocking moment, like this amazing achievement. And then now it's completely gone backwards. And I think, you know, one of the things that we've witnessed is just the fact that, okay, when push comes to shove, we haven't really changed all that much. The lion's share of the domestic burden just falls to women, like automatically, like that's what happens. And one of the things I've wondered about since, you know, my book is coming out, like, you know, during this time, is how will that change the reader's experience of the book? And like, because how is it changing our ideas about motherhood or desires around motherhood? Like, our, you know, for the women who are right now on the cusp of making that decision, is it going to tip them one way or the other?
I have so many colleagues, and this is, again, like, I am absolutely not judging. In a way, I'm like, wow. I have so many colleagues who have gotten pregnant during this time period. And it's been a dark year for a lot of people. And I think a lot about what that decision must have been like during COVID. This is what we're doing. This is happening, and this is how it's going to go. I have friends who have given birth. They were pregnant prior to COVID, and the hospital experience is different. So really, I've been thinking about that a lot too.
Well, I mean, in some ways, COVID, it's like the hurricane baby. It's just like,
I mean, where else are you going to go? What else are you doing? Nobody's doing anything except for, you know, like, especially in those early days, it's like, it's wine and it's Tiger King. That's it. That's your life.
It was that's how it was in my house pretty much. But I do wonder, as the fallout like really like settles in of COVID, especially, you know, given our economy, given what's happened with like the job market, et cetera, I do wonder, like, okay, women who are in their 20s right now, women who are, you know, in their early 30s, is this going to swing their decision? Or is it even going to, like, one of the things I always wonder is, when is motherhood going to become a choice for all of us? Because it's not sold as a choice. Like, we are raised to assume we are going to have a baby. And I remember when I was dealing with this decision myself and resisting it, like early on, like when I was in my 30s, early 30s, I remember people saying to me stuff like, when I'd say, I don't think I'm going to have a baby, people would be like, oh yeah, you are. And then I'd say, no, I really don't think so. And then they're like, well, obviously you haven't met the right person. And I'm like, oh, I'm married. And then they're like, oh, well. And I just, all this implication, like all this resistance to believing me. And I just remember feeling like, oh, like, you really don't think this is a choice for me. And, you know, people would tell me things like, you'll regret it. Like, I mean, they really drilled that into me to the point where I was really afraid. Like, if I felt fearful of life without children. And, you know, so it didn't feel like a choice for me.
Right,
and I do wonder, when are we going to hit that point when it really is a choice? Like women believe it's a choice. Women are raised to believe that it's a choice. And I wonder if COVID will be that tipping point for younger generations of women. So
that's interesting. Because I was going to say, I think we have like decades before that, but maybe not. Maybe COVID really will be a tipping point.
Yeah, I hope if there is a tipping point, I hope my book is in the middle of it helping.
I think I had mentioned, as soon as I saw what this book was about, I was like, oh, this one is going to be a really good one. I can't wait to read this one. And, you know, immediately was like, well, then we have to have the author and turn the page. So are you working on anything right now?
I am playing around with a new novel, but I'm not ready to talk about it.
That's fine.
But I have been for the last, like, I guess since last summer, I launched a national study during COVID on related to my earlier academic work on restorative justice. And so I've spent most of the pandemic interviewing people, which is actually, it's been a great thing to do during the pandemic. So most of my life has gone toward the nonfiction side of things. And I've just done a lot of reading. So I've been reading like a maniac, as I'm sure a lot of people have. And so that's been a big part of my pandemic too. So
what have you read that you've really liked recently?
I think one of the books that has really stayed with me, but I read it early on in the pandemic, was My Dark Vanessa. I thought was just extraordinary. But another book that I just obsessed over and told everyone I knew to read, let's see, there's two. Fleischman Is in Trouble blew me away. I hadn't read that before. And then Sea Wife by Amity Gage, which I don't know if you read that, but
no.
I read it in 2 days on the beach last August. Like, a friend of mine handed it to me and we were going for walks, and she's a writer too. And so she was like, here, read this. And so when I left my walk, I like went home, sat on the beach and opened the book. And like 2 days later, you know, like literally the next day I finished it. It's unputdownable, I thought. So what about you?
Oh man. So I say this constantly during podcasts. So horror and suspense has been my pandemic comfort read. Because it keeps your mind going and there's always an end, and especially during the pandemic, and like still we don't know what the end game is. You know, like we hope we see the light at the end of the tunnel. People are getting vaccinated now, there's hopefully, you know, just some more competency in making that happen and the way that we understand what COVID is. But still, people are still getting sick. It's not gone yet. We're not out of the woods yet. But, you know, when you read suspense and you read horror specifically, the things that are happening are so wild, but there's an end. And you get to close the book and you get to put it down and you get to think about it. When I was younger, I used to watch Unsolved Mysteries when I felt sick. And even though those were unsolved, and I guess there wasn't really an end to it, there was something about having, you know, like getting my blood pumping and, you know, that like kind of made me feel a little bit better. So I think there was a lot of that in it also. It's a physical experience. That said, a novel that I read that is, I feel very much of this time, and I'm really excited because we're going to have this author as a virtual guest sometime in April. Actually, it's going to be April 16th. So I believe as of this podcast dropping, that will be next week. The Smash Up by Ali Benjamin, who also used to write YA middle grade.
Oh, I read about that and I want to read it. So
yeah,
great.
It is a modern retelling of Ethan Frome, which takes place in the period right before the Kavanaugh hearings.
That's fascinating.
It is in so many ways. So I do recommend that one. That one is really just like at the end of that one, it really did blow me away just how much I felt for Zenobia. You know, if those who are listening have read Ethan Frome, because it is mostly from Ethan's point of view, and there's a lot of things in it that are, you know, it delves into Me Too. It delves into entitlement and how men can sort of perceive things that are injustice, but don't 100% understand because those are not things that they themselves will deal with. And just the whole relationship between Ethan, Zenobia, and Maddie is just so well drawn and updated. And I can't stop thinking about it. So that's one that I would say.
I definitely want to read it. So if you, the other book that I should mention, which is a memoir, not a novel, but I think is goes down as one of my top five reads ever is Chanel Miller's Know My Name, which it's a very intense read, but it is one of the most gorgeously written books I've ever read in my life. I couldn't put it down. Like I can't stop thinking about it. That's another one that I've told. I mean, you know, it's a huge bestseller, as it should be, but that's one of those books where I've hounded my friends over it. Like, if you haven't read it yet, you have to read this book at some point in your life. And I love that book with all my heart. And it felt like, so I read it partly because of my restorative justice project, and it felt like justice, that book. So I would highly, highly recommend it.
It is now on my list.
You have to read it. It's stunning.
So when does your book officially drop?
April 6th.
So as of the date that this has dropped, this is the release week of The Nine Lives of Rose Napolitano. And please just run to your libraries and bookshop.org. If you don't feel like going to a bookstore is also a good way to go. I believe it'll be available on Overdrive. Is there an audiobook version of it?
Yes, I think it's supposed to come out the same day.
Okay, very cool. And so for those who prefer the audio version of it, you will have that as well. Okay, well, once again, this was Jessica, and our guest today was?
Donna Freitas, author of The Nine Lives of Rose Napolitano. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for doing this. We are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.